Blog Talk Radio.
Tactical things, part of it sorted out. This is the 3rd of September in the year 2014, and of course this is the important 75th anniversary of the starting of World War II. It's very important. There's just a new movie out called Westerplock about how a Polish army contingent at the port of Danzig held off the German battleship Schleswig-Holstein and a military force of SS, German sailors, and German army for over a week, and was part of the heroic resistance of the Polish army against the Nazi invasion. Of course, there's more to it, and we'll get into that. What's important also is King George VI, who was formerly the Duke of Kent, the younger brother of Edward VII, who later became Duke of Windsor. He didn't want to become king. He had two daughters married to a woman who was of Scottish ancestry, who later became his wife, Elizabeth. And after the abdication of Edward VII, who also allegedly had German pro-Hitler sentiments, of course, the House of Windsor is actually German. They go back to the Battenbergs and Saxe-Coburg on the Hanoverian kings after in the 16th century after James II died, and the English got tired of the Catholic kings and all the abuses were inflicted upon the English. But anyway, I think it's important that there was a movie called The King's Speech, and George VI, Duke of Kent, had a speech impediment, and he was coached and trained on how to speak without indicating he had the speech impediment. He was coached by this Australian speech therapist, and I think this is important because this is one of the most important probably the most important speech that he made in his life. He didn't live that long. He died in 1952 when his daughter, Princess Elizabeth, went on a tour of the Commonwealth, and she got news of his death. He had cancer, like his father, George V. And he died, and when Princess Elizabeth was called back to England, she was called back as the queen about to be crowned. And, of course, she's still the queen today, and I understand she may be near death or abdicating, not in favor of Charles, but William and his wife. But anyway, here's George VI's most important speech of his life. This is actually from our archives, and we got this through when we were at Western Public Radio.
In this grave hour, perhaps the most faithful in our history, I send to every household of my people, both at home and overseas, this message, spoken with the same depth of feeling for each one of you, as if I were able to cross your threshold and speak to you myself. For the second time in the lives of most of us, we are at war. Over and over again, we have tried to find a peaceful way out of the differences between ourselves and those who are now our enemies. But it has been in vain. We have been forced into a conflict, for we are called with our allies to meet the challenge of a principle which, if it were to prevail, would be fatal to any civilized order in the world. It is the principle which permits a state, in the selfish pursuit of power, to disregard its treaties and its solemn pledges, which sanctions the use of force or threat of force against the sovereignty and independence of other states. Such a principle, stripped of all disguise, is surely the mere primitive doctrine that might is right. And if this principle were established throughout the world, the freedom of our own country and of the whole British Commonwealth of Nations would be in danger. But far more than this, the peoples of the world would be kept in the bondage of fear, and all hopes of settled peace and of the security of justice and liberty among nations would be ended. This is the ultimate issue which confronts us. For the sake of all that we ourselves hold dear, and of the world's order and peace, it is unthinkable that we should refuse to meet the challenge. It is to this high purpose that I now call my people at home and my peoples across the seas, who will make our cause their own. I ask them to stand calm and firm and united in this time of trial. The task will be hard. There may be dark days ahead and war can no longer be confined to the battlefield. But we can only do the right as we see the light, and reverently commit our cause to God. If one and all we keep resolutely faithful to it, ready for whatever service or sacrifice it may demand, and then with God's help, we shall prevail. May He bless and keep us all.
Now, that was the first speech and the most difficult speech for the King George VI. Didn't live that long. I think he lived into his 50s. But the famous movie, The King's Speech, we'll get into this. And Colin Firth, who was also in Equus and other films, got an Academy Award. He was also in one of the John Le Carré films as a spy, a traitor, in Smiley's People. Along the births today, Louis Sullivan, one of the great American architects, who's known as the father of the American skyscrapers. You can see some of his works. I think some of the buildings are still in New York and Chicago. The guy who started the American-U.S. Credit Union, Edward Albert Fellaini, born on this day. In Canada, our neighbor to the north, the new party you only hear of the conservatives and the liberals, there was the Funny Money Party, the Hippopotamus Party, a Rhinoceros Party, and then the New Democratic Party was started by a guy named Andrew Brewer. Remember the movie Shane and Brandon DeWild and Alan Ladd? Well, Alan Ladd was born on the stage, didn't live that long. And then a woman who was on What's My Line, Kitty Carlisle Hart, or Kelly, with her New York accent, her birthday. One of the great, two great women who were actresses in Greece. There was Irene Pappas and the woman who did Zorba, or not Zorba, but Irene Pappas was in Zorba, classic face, and also she was in Z and Electra, one of my favorite actresses, her birthday. And, of course, the other woman was Never on Sunday. Was also married to a Greek government official, but Irene Pappas, great actress, and I highly recommend her movies. Another actress who was in South Pacific, and I think Damn Yankees, Mitzi Gaynor, her birthday. And, of course, one of the sons, Martin Sheen, the family is half Spanish and half Irish ethnicity. Charlie Sheen, born on this day. His brother decided to keep the Spanish name Emilio Estevez, which is the other half of that family. The longest reigning English king, and I think he had a son, James II, but James I died at 92. No English king or even Victoria did not live that long. Incidentally, Victoria made a very rare audio. She was the first English monarch to do a very brief and to do even an audio recording. This has turned up in the EMI archives over in Britain, and we'll see if we can get a tape of that. Today also is the death of Ho Chi Minh, who was the big enemy in the Vietnam War. And, of course, this is something new that's come up. There are, unfortunately, professional POWs. They ignore the POWs who were horribly tortured and abused when they were in the Hanoi Hilton. And I just learned this today from a source who has been working on POW issues and all the cover-ups that have been going on for years. Now, I understand that there are even French POWs if they're still living, from the end of the Battle of Dien Bien Phu, when the French were defeated in French Indochina. These people are called pearls. They're held for ransom. This is what we're hearing from our intelligence sources. Great football coach of the Green Bay Packers, and there's a connection to the Steve Neri U.S. Navy case, Vince Lombardi. Artie Funer, who was a witness in the case, which was illegally tried in San Francisco's Kangaroo Court in September and October of 1999. Artie Funer was one of the trainers from Vince Lombardi, the great Vince Lombardi of the Green Bay Packers football team. Remember the Cisco Kid? Well, Duncan Ronaldo, he died on this day. And then there's an interesting case of a dentist, and this is one of the controversies of medical people and medical personnel who were infected with communicable diseases such as HIV or AIDS. This doctor, David Asser, died. He contaminated at least five patients of his when he was a dentist. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, this is the only disease that have a political agenda. 1991, the great movie director who did Why We Fight and other films during the 30s and about depression and social issues, Frank Capra, died on this day. And among the events on September 3rd, we had Richard B. Lionhearted. Now, he didn't live that long. He was crowned as king. There was a Treaty of Paris, which ended the American Revolution, which the British defeated. They were defeated at Yorktown. That was enough. And, of course, the commanding general, Lord Cornwallis, later went on to become Viceroy of India. Quite an interesting guy. In 1826, the first U.S. Navy ship to circumvent the globe, USS Vincennes. That ship has been overshadowed by the USS Vincennes, which was accidentally shot down an Iranian jet while it was in a passenger jet while the Vincennes was on patrol in off Iran in the Arabian Sea. In 1833, we had the first New York daily newspaper, the New York Sun, has since disappeared. And also, we had in 1900, what was known as Nepal and South Africa and later the Boer War, the British won that war, but they created a lot of problems. They annexed Nepal and renamed it South Africa, which was dominated by the Dutch Calvinists and French Huguenots. That's why you see some of the names today. And of course, there were English down there, and the English have never been respected because the Dutch and the French Huguenots resented the abuse of the English who were lording it over them. In 1960, one of the great battles, and I remember driving back from Germany, I stopped at Verdun in the middle of the night. The French turned back the Germans at this famous fort, and was, of course, the Sacre Road, where the General Gallieni requisitioned all the taxis in Paris to supply the fort at Verdun to hold back the Germans, and Marshal Petain was the commanding general, and he later, unfortunately, he was named ambassador to Spain when Franco was dictator down there, and later when the French were defeated in 1940 or had surrendered, because they could have defeated the Germans and the Nazi armies, Petain became the head of Vichy, and de Gaulle never forgave him for betraying France as he saw it. Petain was, even though he was the hero of Verdun, Petain was tried for treason, but he was not executed like Laval, Pierre Laval. And so Petain was sent to prison for the rest of his life, and de Gaulle never forgave him. In 1939, Britain and France declared war, and of course we had the famous speech by King George VI on September 3rd, 1939. And believe it or not, the first broadcast of color TV was in 1940 on this day. And in 1945, to the great relief of the Filipinos, the Japanese surrendered in the Philippines. And of course, all the horrible things were done by the Japanese Navy sailors. General Yamashita, who was the commanding general of the army, he had no control over the Japanese Navy sailors, and Yamashita was tried as a war criminal by General MacArthur when General MacArthur became the American Caesar in Britain, in Japan. And, of course, the argument has been that Yamashita should not have been tried as a war criminal because he had no control over the sailors who were going around massacring, torturing, and massacring Filipino civilians. Yamashita was also the general who defeated General Percival at the Battle of Singapore. He was known as the Tiger of Malaya. In 1964, those of us who appreciate the wilderness, LBJ signed the Wilderness Act. And, of course, in 1971, there was the Watergate complex hotel building in Washington, D.C., where there was the burglaring of Dr. Daniel Ellsberg's safe. Ellsberg, unfortunately, has apparently gone off the deep end, and he is now, or he has, supported another traitor, the guy who was turned over, like John Walker, who turned over military secrets and government secrets, put him on the web and turned him over to his lover. He had a lover's spot, Timothy Manning. And, of course, as we earlier brought up, that John Walker Jr., who was a retired Navy veteran, for $100,000, he gave the KGB what is an estimated $1 billion worth of naval military secrets and communications, and he employed his whole family and his best friend and his brother, his son, who apparently didn't like blacks, was on the, I think, USS Enterprise, and the son, unfortunately, none of these people should have been shot. Among the public policy questions that we ask, since these people, John Walker, the people that he worked with to betray America's secrets to the KGB, Ames, there's some others who have turned over secrets to the KGB, whether it was because of the honeypot or they were getting money, and Robert Miller, who worked for the FBI and counterintelligence, should these people have been executed instead of should there be capital punishment like we inflicted upon the Rosenbergs when they turned over, or part of the ring that turned over atomic secrets to the Russians back in the 50s. So that's a public policy question. Among the other public policy questions that we raise, the young girl who was 9 years old, who was at a shooting range, I believe, in Arizona, and was handling an Uzi, which is a deadly weapon, and it's very sensitive, and she ended up by an accident, lost control of the gun. She never had control of it anyway, and killing the instructor. Should there be a public policy dictum that nobody under 18 should be allowed to be handling guns or even at a gun shooting site? So that's a public policy question. There'll be more of these questions we're going to be raising because it's costing the insurance companies a lot of money. It's damaging lives, causing a lot of trouble, and there are other issues we need to deal with. Now, another one we're seeing now, this figure just came out. We know one San Franciscan who's had at least four vehicles stolen in his neighborhood, four that belonged to him. The most recent was one he had for 4 days. And he had a club on the steering wheel, and that vehicle was stolen. And when his insurance agent and insurance adjuster, claims adjuster, said to him, "Don't you know that the club does not protect vehicles because they cut the steering wheel? You need an alarm." Well, these are things that happen. But nearly 6,000 vehicles have been stolen in San Francisco alone. Now, there are also break-ins of vehicles, and that's called the San Francisco Urban Tax. We're going to put up on the web what we've documented, all these vehicles that have had their windows broken. And it's expensive. It's about $150 to replace the window, and plus if you have a deductible and all the things which you should not leave in your car. They're warning people, don't leave anything in your vehicle because these midnight bicycle people, they go around on bicycles, scope out what they see in a car, but it doesn't look like it has an alarm. They'll break the window and go in and steal what they can think that's in there, or what it looks like in there that's valuable. So if you're coming to San Francisco, don't wear flowers in your hair. It's not the city where there was once friendship, fun, and fraternity during the 60s, the late 60s and early 70s. It's now a place where there's a lot of tyranny and people who don't go along with the so-called San Francisco values of pornography, pedophilia, and preying on children and spying on people and trying to get people to toe the line to political correction. It's not the same great city that it once was, where there was really friendship, fun, and fraternity. It's now fear, loathing, and contempt for the agendas that are going on. People talk behind their back, but these things are going on. Now, what's also interesting is the San Francisco's male prostitution pedophile paper, The Bay Reporter, suddenly gotten involved in the Michael Brown case in Ferguson, Missouri, and it's very bizarre. Why is a gay paper getting involved in Michael Brown's the controversy involving that case? Now, this is interesting. This just came up that it's come up again that a black teenager suspected male prostitute in St. Louis, Missouri, died in a hospital in St. Louis back in the mid-60s. One of the doctors kept slides of the tissue of this young teenager, and they were looking at them recently, or somebody pulled them out of archives, and they examined them again and discovered this teenager had HIV or AIDS. So this may have been the first discovery of AIDS and HIV in the United States back in the 60s. Nobody knew about that back in the 60s and early 70s. So, you know, it's been around. Now, the other thing is we're seeing, as I said, there have been 6,000 or more, close to 6,000 vehicles stolen in San Francisco and the Bay Area. San Francisco is a city and county of 49 square miles. But every day on the news we hear the Northern California, there's been some driver involved in a hit and run, either injuring or killing the victim. A bicyclist run down people in the street. They have an attitude that we're special, that the rules of the road don't apply to us. And then when bicycles, we've had at least two deaths. The issue is, these bicyclists don't have liability insurance. They don't carry identification. They don't have warning devices as required on their bicycles, and the rules of the road require this. Should anybody, here's a public policy question, should anybody who causes, who does a hit and run, whether it's a bicyclist or a car or motorcycle, should that person be barred from having a license and being allowed to drive on our roads again? So it's a public policy question that people ought to think about, because if you had insurance, your insurance company's paying for these slime, and the people have a totally disregard of other people's rights. They will put others at risk for, you know, just because of their own contempt for the rights of others and the rules of the road and safety of others. So this is one of our many public policy issues. We're going to be republishing some of the best of our Veritas USA. We've got to get our printing press up and working. So that also, we will have more on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS. And we're going to end now on our usual politics and poker. And let's bring it up. Excuse me. So I'm sorry. We're hopefully our new system is working. And go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUIVERITAS at YouTube, and AMICUSVERITAS.net. And we'll end with our usual politics and poker, and we'll be back Friday at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. Excuse me. So stay safe, and here we go. And we'll have more on our political animals coming up. I've got a lot of presidents here. Here we go. Politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey,
Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in one.
So am I.
Five.
Hit two.
Hit me with a
gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear.
We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace Betts.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the time?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, how to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Carrot raise.
Bet him.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll stay.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Dave, he's too bright.
What about Walt Dusty's son?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, play for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, running neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck.
Incidentally, it's estimated over $400,000 may have been raised with the defense if it's needed for Ferguson Police Officer Darren Wilson. We'll be back Friday at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. Good night. Stay safe.